We are on Kuf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. We're up to the seventh line by the two dots. Okay, so the Mishnah yesterday, in the beginning of the Perek, told us the Ein Nosnim L'Talyuha B'Shabbos. We spoke about a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim in the Mishnah regarding hanging up a strainer in the first place and then putting things through a strainer. So yesterday we were focusing on the angle of not creating an ohel, which we're going to come back to later on this daf. But now the Gemara is going to focus on the issue of not actually straining anything through the strainer. So that's why the Mishnah said that you're not, at least according to the Chachamim, you're not allowed to put anything through the strainer on Shabbos, even if the strainer was hung up from beforehand. So the question is, the question is, what would the halacha be if a person went ahead and did strain something on Shabbos? So Amar Rav Kahana, shimer chayev chatas, that's an isser d'oraisa. Straining is considered a form of a malacha, and therefore if you did it b'shogeg on Shabbos, you would be chayev a karban chatas. So the Gemara asks, maskef lo Rav Sheshes, so the Gemara says, hang on one second. In our Mishnah, we seem to have a very radical machlokes here, because the Chachamim say, you're not allowed to put anything through a strainer, even if the strainer was hung up from before, and you can't do that on Shabbos. Rabbi Eliezer seemed to assume that was mutter lechadchila. The problem is that generally speaking, whenever we have a machlokes on Hilchos Shabbos, to go from mutter to isser d'oraisa doesn't usually work. You know, there's usually this in-between ground of pater Rav Alasser, of Isser Durabanan. So how does, in other words, how does the Mishnah jump from Mutter to Asr? So the Gemara says, it's not so crazy. The Gemara says, Maskeflor of Yosef Alamalo. Why not? Why can't you have a jump, you know, this radical machlokas from Mutter to Asr? Hare Irshal Zahav, the Rameir Mechayev Chatos, Rabbi Eliezer Shari Lechadchila. So the Gemara says, what about this machlokas we had all the way back on Daf Nundes? The Gemara had this case of the Irshal Zahav, the woman who walks out with the golden tiara in the shape of Yerushalayim. So what was that case? Mahi, Tisanya, Loteitze Isha be Irshal Zahav, Vim Yatza Chayev Es Chatos, Divere Mayor, Vachachamim Omerim Lotetze Vim Yatzab Tura, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Yotze Isha Beirshal Zav Lechadchila. The Gemara back on Daf Nun Tes presented a three-way machlokes regarding the scope of the issue of a woman walking out with this golden tiara. Rabbi Meir says it's an Isser D'Oraisa. The Chachamim say it's an Isser D'Rabanan. Rabbi Eliezer says it's Mutter Lechadchila. So the Gemara says if you start to pair up Rabbi Eliezer with Rabbi Meir, it turns out you have two radical positions. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a good example. The Gemara says, Omer Le'ab the Gemara says, yeah, in that Gemara Daf Nun Tes, when Rabbi Eliezer said mutter, he wasn't contrasting to Rabbi Meir. He wasn't saying it's mutter in contrast to Rabbi Meir who says Isser Doraisa. He was contrasting to the opinion of the Rabbanan. In other words, he was saying that, no, in other words, the Rabbanan say that it's an Isser Dorabanan for the woman to wear the golden tiara. So I'm going to contrast that by saying that it's mutter lechadchila. But normally, if you only have two opinions, like in our Mishnah, that you know, it's not so normal for the Gemara for the Mishnah to present two such radical opinions. In the case on Daf Nun Tes, there happens to be a middle ground opinion anyway of the Rabbanan, so it's not so crazy for Rabbi Eliezer to just go a step down from the Rabbanan and say that it's Mutter Lechadchila. Okay, so now the question becomes, the Gemara says, Mishum Mai Masrinan Bei. Well, what exactly is the issue with straining in the first place? Meaning, like, what malacha are you violating? If I saw a person straining something on Shabbos, what would the hasra that I need to give them be? In other words, what malacha are they even doing? So the Gemara says, it's Machlokas. Rabba Amar Mishum Borer, Rabbi Zera Amar Mishum Marake. So we have a Machlokas between Rabba and Rabbi Zera, whether this is a violation of Borer, is it basically just sorting and selecting? Whereas Rabbi Zera says it's a malacha of Merakid, where it's more similar to sifting. Now, we already spoke about this back on Dav Ayin Dalet and Ayin Hey, where the Gemara already asked the question, isn't Borer, Zora, Merakid, all these malachas are very, very similar. They all have to do with separating good from bad, bad from good. All these malachas are very similar. So there are slight nuances and slight differences between them. But basically, the Gemara says this is the issue in terms of straining. Is straining more like Borer, or is it more like Merakid? So the Gemara now tries to support each of these positions. So Amar Rabba, Kivasi Didi Mistaba. Rabba says, my position, namely, that straining is a problem of Borer, is more logical. Why? Because Ma Darko Shal Borer Notel Ochel Umeiniach Apsoles, Af Hachanami Notel Esa Ochel Umeiniach Es Apsoles. Just as when it comes to Borer, so the way that you violate Borer is by taking the good and leaving the bad, so too here, when you strain something, you take the good and leave the bad. Now, this line in the Gemara is highly problematic, because we know that that's actually not exactly the opposite of what Borer is, right? We know that usually Borer is violated when you take the bad from the good, right? As opposed to the good from the bad. So Tosos back on Daf Ayin Dala discusses what this Gemara means. He says maybe the cases where you have a lot more bad than good, Tosos has some issues with that. So again, this line in the Gemara is not so obvious that this is necessarily the case. So that's according to Rabbah. However, Amar Rab Zera Kvasi Didim Estab. Rab Zera says, no, my position makes more sense. It's more logical to say that straining is more like meraki, like sifting, namely madarko shal meraki psoles milamala v'ochel milamata afachanami psoles milamala v'ochel milamata. Just as when a person sifts something, so all the bad stuff, all the sediments get left on the top, and all the good stuff you want, you know, goes through the sifter. So too, by straining, the same thing happens. So it's really just a question of is it more reasonable to compare straining to borer or to meraki? Okay, so that was in terms of the actual malacha of straining.
Is there any nafka mean a difference to which one?
It's more like a theoretical nafka mina. Meaning, for example, if I saw a person straining on Shabbos, and let's say there was a Sanhedrin and there was Hasra'ah and there were Edim and whatever.
You gave him the wrong
Hasra'ah, so then potentially he would. You know, he would get off the hook, yeah. Okay, so now we're going to circle back to the issue that we were talking about yesterday in terms of creating an ohel on Shabbat. So the Gemara says, Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel, Talis Kfula Lo Yaseh, V'im Asa Patarav Alasar, Hayakorach Aleha Chodo Mashicha, Mutter Lintosa Lecharchila. So Rami Bar Yecheskel makes the following distinction. If I have a cloak that was folded over, and I want to take this folded over cloak and essentially make it into some kind of a tent, an overhang, a canopy, that would be an Isser Derabbanan, because I'm creating an ohel. Now, yes, it's true, this is only an ohel arai, it's only a temporary, it's definitely not a permanent ohel, it's just a cloak, but still, it's going to be an Isser Derabbanan, whereas if I have what's called a chut or a meshicha, if I have some kind of a rope, or I have a cord or something like that was tied on from before Shabbos, then it's going to be mutter lechadchila for me to, you know, hang this up, because I'm not doing anything to create the status of an ohel, it already had the rope or the string, you know, attached from beforehand. So the Gemara now wants to know, but Amine Rav Kahana me Rav Kila Mahu. So Rav Kahana wanted to know from, he asked Rav, what would the halacha be about putting over a canopy on Shabbos? I want to erect a canopy. Is that mutter? So Amar Le, Rav said, Af Mita Asura. Rav said that even putting up a bed is going to be a problem. So the implication is that Kal V'chomer, putting up a canopy is a problem also. So then Rav Kahana asked him further, Mita Mahu. What about putting up a bed? In other words, what about, you know, opening up a bed on Shabbos? So Amar Le, no, Af Kila Muteras. Even opening up a canopy is mutter. So the Gemara is going to have to explain what all these statements mean. Then the Gemara says, Kila Umita Mahu, Amarli Kila Asura Umita Muteris. And now the Gemara says that a canopy is usur, but opening up a bed is mutter. So obviously we have almost like a three-way contradiction here between these statements. So how do we resolve this? The Gemara says, Velo Kashya, Hadika Amar Af Mita Asura Kidakarmanai. That which the Gemara said, that it's even usher to open up a bed on Shabbos, those are the beds of the Karmanai. The Karmanai were people who lived in the Galil. They had these these foldable beds that they used to have. So opening up these beds was essentially considered a problem of creating an ohel. That which the Gemara says that even erecting a canopy is mutter, that conforms with the case of Rami Bar Yecheskel, because we just saw in the previous Gemara that Rami Bar Yecheskel said that if there was a rope or a string that was attached from before Shabbos, then it's mutter lechanchila to do that. And then when the Gemara said kila asuro mita muteres kedididan, when the Gemara said that that opening the canopy is usher, but the bed is mutter, that would conform with the types of beds and canopies that we have, because in other words, they're essentially they don't need to be folded up. But nonetheless, when it comes to the case of the bed, for example, you're still setting the bed up. It's still kind of like a form of makam epatish when you're erecting the bed. So the Gemara now says,
which I don't, but if I have an awning in my, having, you know, attached to my house, would I be able to unroll that awning with that?
So it would probably depend again on the nature of, you know, on exactly how, you know, whether it's considered an ohel, how far it, we'll see this as we go on in the Gemara, you know how far it overhangs may have certain ramifications, whether it's a problem. I think the simple answer is that even if it's something which is only temporary, that's still a problem, at least midrabanan, right? To erect what's called an ohel arai, a temporary dwelling, a temporary ohel, I think is still going to be a problem midrabanan, at least on Shabbos. Okay, so the Gemara now says, "Amar Rav Yosef, Chazina lehu lechile de Rav Huna de Meorta Negidu umitzafra chavita Ramya." And Rav Yosef just said that, you know, I saw the canopies in the house of Rav Huna. So he says that in the evening, in the morning, all the canopies were standing up, and then later in the day on Shabbos morning, the next day, they were all lying flat. In other words, the implication is that Rav Huna had dismantled all of his canopies on Shabbos. So you see from here that it's permissible to erect and obviously by inference to dismantle these types of canopies on Shabbos. Okay. Amarav Mishum Rabbi Chia, Vilon Mutter Lintoso Umutter Leforko. So comes the Gemara and says that if I have a curtain is permissible. I can put up a curtain, I can take down a curtain. That is completely permissible to do because that is not considered a form of an ohel because there's no roof on top of the curtain. The Amar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Chia, Kilas Chasanim Mutter Lintoso Umutter Leforko. The same is true when it comes to a canopy that's made for a chasan and a kala, right? They used to make these canopies, these little, these huts that the chasan and kala would live in during the week of Sheva Brachos. So that's also mutter to put up and to take down on Shabbos. Again, because the assumption is that it's not really considered like an ohel, because it doesn't have like a normal roof. So now the Gemara,
how does this apply to an umbrella?
So that's a good question. So the Noda Behuda has a famous tshuva about umbrellas on Shabbos. So there are a number of issues with using an umbrella. The primary issue is creating an ohel. That is the primary issue. So you'll say, okay, so what if I open the umbrella before Shabbos? So I already made the ohel. So first of all, it's going to be marasayin anyway, because no one's going to think that you open the umbrella beforehand. And even so, if you close the umbrella, it's also a problem, because then that's a problem of soser, of destroying the ohel. In theory, walking with an umbrella is definitely not a malacha, again, assuming that there's an eruv. It's definitely not a malacha per se, but, it's become a very widely accepted minhag to not use umbrellas on Shabbos. It's become, for the last 300-400 years already, that's been the minhag. Okay, so now the Gemara...
It's an open and shut case.
Back with the jokes. Yes, it is an open and shut case. Well, it's not. It's actually not really an open and shut case, but it's a widely accepted minhag that it's an open and shut case.
To be that Somet Institute has a specially designed Shabbos umbrella.
Oh yeah.
And the way it's designed is when you open it up, it's never fully open and it's never fully closed. It's sort of like in a halfway point. But it's effective. But it was a very clever way of you to. So yeah. I saw it on their website many years ago.
Interesting. Okay, there you go. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to come and qualify the statement that we just made. Because again, we said that technically you're allowed to put up and to dismantle this canopy that you make for the chasen and kala. But the Gemara is now going to give a whole number of qualifications to this statement. Amar Rav Sheshes Berei de Rav Yidi, Lo Amran Ela She'in Begaga Tefach, Aval Yesh Begaga Tefach Asur. So first of all, the only time that you're allowed to put up or take down this kilas chasanim, the canopy for the chasen and kala, is assuming that the roof is less than a tefach. If the top of the canopy is more than a tefach, then we already treat it like a regular roof, and then putting it up is considered like an ohel. And then the Gemara continues. The Gemara says, "V'chein begaga tefach nami lo amran ela she'in befachos mishlosha samach legaga tefach aval yesh befachos mishlosha samach legaga tefach aser." Even if the roof is less than a tefach, but if the top part of the canopy is within three tefachim of the roof, it's also going to be a problem because again, that's an issue of lavud, so that's still going to be considered like an ohel. V'lo amran ela she'in b'shipua tefach aval yesh b'shipua tefach. Then the Gemara has another qualification. The Gemara says that he says that this halacha that you could put up the canopy on Shabbos is provided that the slope, the incline on the top of the canopy is less than a tefach. If it's more than a tefach, then the Gemara invokes this principle called shipuei ohalim ka'olim, which based on a Gemara Masechet Sukkah that says that whenever you have a slant or an incline on top of an ohel, that has the status of an ohel. So that would also be a problem. And then the fourth qualification, the Gemara says, Lo Amran, Ella Delo Nachis Mipuria Tefach, Aval Nachis Mipuria Tefach Aser. So this is the fourth qualification, which is that if the roof of the canopy descends and goes beyond a tefach beneath where the bed is inside of the canopy, that's also a problem because what's happening there is that the bed now becomes like the roof, because if you think about it, if the roof starts to slope all the way down beneath the bed, so now the bed becomes like the roof, and now you just created a wall, a mechitza, with the roof of the canopy. So the Gemara says, unless you meet all four of these criteria, you will not be allowed to put up or to dismantle this canopy on Shabbos. Okay. The Gemara now says, V'amar Rav Sheshes Berei de Rav Yidim, Hi Siana Share. The Gemara says that it's permissible to wear a felt hat on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? So Ha'itmar Siana Asher. Don't we have another statement in the Gemara that says that you're not allowed to wear it? The Gemara says, no, Lokashia. Ha de Ispe Tefach. Ha de Lispe Tefach. The Gemara says, it depends, you know, basically how big the brim of the hat is. If the brim of the hat is less than a Tefach, then it's okay. If it's more than a Tefach, then it's fine. What's the issue exactly? The assumption is that if the brim is more than a Tefach, that is basically like you're creating an ohel. Now again, we don't usually think of our hats as an ohel, but again, it, you know, once the brim extends far enough, the Gemara says maybe that's a problem of creating an ohel. So the Gemara says, well, hang on one second. Elameat, if that's the case, sharbiv biglima tefach, hachanami demichayav, if you're going to tell me that wearing a hat with a wide brim is a problem of making an ohel, if that's really true, so what if a guy, let's say, has a cloak, or let's say a person is wearing a tallis even, and they take the top, they put it over their head, and they just kind of push it really far over their head, more than a tefach. Is that going to be a problem? Is that usher? You're just wearing your garment. You're not creating an ohel, right? So no one thinks that wearing a hat, you know, regardless of how wide the brim is, no one really thinks that's an ohel. So what's the issue exactly with wearing the hat on Shabbos? Like, you're right, there's a different problem.
Rabbi, you're not creating anything. You're just wearing something.
You're wearing it, but again, when the hat was not on your head, there was no quote-unquote ohel. Now again, the Gemara ends up rejecting this as an ohel problem. We'll see in a second what the issue exactly with this hat is, with whether the brim is a tefach or not. The Gemara says, Ela lo kashya, ha de mihadak, ha de lo mihadak. The issue is not an ohel problem. It's a very technical problem, midrabanan, that that there's a fear that maybe your hat will blow off in the wind and you may come to carry it in Rishas Harabim. That's the issue. So if that's a legitimate issue with the type of hat you're wearing, then you should not wear that hat on Shabbos. That issue doesn't exist with the hat you're wearing, then it's going to be mutter. So really, again, it just depends on the width of the brim, essentially. Okay, fine. So now the Gemara continues. The Gemara says, Shalach le Rami bar Yecheskel le Ravuna. Ema lan ize hanach mile ma'al yisa de amar lan mishmei de Rav, tarte b'shabes v'chada b'torah. So Rami bar Yecheskel said to Ravuna, please tell us all these amazing statements, these amazing things that you heard in the base medrash in the name of Rav, two halachos pertaining to Shabbos, and one halach or one statement regarding Torah. So he said to him, Shalach le, hadesanya, good bechisna mutter lintosa b'shabbos. So the Braisa tells us that if I have a wineskin that has straps that are attached to it, you are allowed to stretch that out and to hang that up on Shabbos. So Amar Rav, comes Rav and qualifies that statement. Lo shanu ela beveiz b'nei adam. Ram says it's not always true. The only time you're allowed to hang up or stretch out a wineskin with their straps is if two people are doing it. Why? What's the difference if two people are doing it? Because the assumption is if two different people are hanging the straps up on different parts of the roof, let's say, or the ceiling, so they're not really going to stretch the wineskin. They're just going to hang it up on a hook and just kind of leave it there. But if one person has to run to one side and then run to the other side, you know, so what you're basically doing is that you're going to have to stretch out the wineskin. This is like the way that I think about this is like if you're putting a sheet over your bed by yourself. So when you put a sheet on your bed over yourself, you have to like hold down one side, you have to stretch it out to the other side. You have to do a little bit of maneuvering to get the sheet over the bed frame. If you're doing it with two people, so usually you just put one side down, the other side down, and that's it. And then everything fits over the bed. So the Gemara says,
what's the halachic issue here?
The issue is that if you're going to come to stretch out the wineskin, you're essentially making it into an ohel. Meaning, in other words, if I just take the straps on two sides of one, let's say me and someone else, just hang it up on a hook and just leave it there, so that's not an ohel. I didn't do anything. But if I put it on one side, then I run to the other side and I start stretching it and I have to maneuver it and get it over to the other hook, I'm stretching it out. I'm making it very taut. So now it's considered like an ohel. That's a problem. I'm creating, again, it's probably not going to be a problem mido raisa, but I'm still creating some form of an ohel. So Amar Abaye, so comes Abaye and says, V'chila afilu biyud b'nei adam aser, I efshar delo mimtecha purta. Abaye adds, he says, when it comes to a canopy, even if there are 10 people who are participating and putting up this canopy, that's still a problem. Why? Because the assumption is that no matter how many people are participating in erecting the canopy, you are going to need to stretch it to some degree, and therefore it's going to be a problem of creating an ohel. So this was the first statement that they made in the base medrash. Then idach mahi, what was the second statement regarding Hilchos Shabbos? The Sanya, the Braisa says, kira shenishmita achas miyarchoseha mutter letaltala shtayim aser, Rav Amar afilu chad nami aser, Gzeira Shema Yiska. So comes the Gemara with the following distinction. Let's say I have an oven, or a stove rather, and one of the legs of the stove broke. Now again, we're going to remember, obviously, back in the times of the Gemara, their stoves were portable, right? So the stoves had legs on them. So the Gemara says, if one of the legs of the stove broke, that stove is still basically a functional stove. So let's say, for example, the stove is sitting in a place that I need, because again, it's portable. So let's say, I don't know, the stove is blocking my Shabbos table, and I want to move the stove, so that's the Tzorech Mekomo. So the Gemara says that it's mutter to move the stove on Shabbos, the Tzorech Mekomo, if only one of the legs broke, but the second that two of the legs on the stove broke, then that stove is no longer functional at all. And once the stove is no longer functional at all, that is considered to be objectively mukta. When something is objectively mukta, you're never allowed to move it for any reason. So for example, a rock, if you didn't, assuming that you didn't set it aside from before Shabbos for a mutter function, you can never move a rock under any circumstance at all. So if there's a rock sitting on my Shabbos table, I'm not allowed to move that, even though it's the Tzorech Mekomo. The heter of the Tzorech Mekomo is only for a kli shemalach d'liyaser, a kli whose primary function is used for something usher, like a hammer, for example, and I want to use it to crack open nuts, or it's blocking the table and I want to set the table, then it's okay to move. But something which is objectively usher is going to be problematic. So the Gemara says, once two of the legs of the stove break, so then that stove is not functional anymore, and therefore I would not be allowed to move it for any reason. Rav is even more machmir. Rav says that even if only one of the legs of the stove broke, I'm still not allowed to move the stove, not because of a muktzah problem, but because we're afraid that if you start to move the stove, you may come to fix one of the legs, and as a result, it's going to be a violation of makeh b'patish. So again, that's the machlokes regarding the stove. Okay. Then the Gemara...
According to the first guy, does it matter when these legs were broken?
No, well, no. The assumption is that the legs broke on Shabbos. That's exactly the case. Yeah. That means, I mean, again, because you're trying to move the stove out of the way on Shabbos, and then something happened to the stove on Shabbos. If the stove broke from before Shabbos, then you should have, you know, figured out what to do beforehand. You shouldn't have left the stove around, you know, once Shabbos started, right? But if the stove broke on Shabbos itself, that's exactly that's the case here. Okay.
What would the scenario be? Right, the stove is a broken shop. You're not using the stove anyway.
No, correct. But the stove, let's say the stove is blocking my table. Again, remember they had portable stoves back then, right? So the stove is blocking my table.
When it broke, it moved.
Well, no, meaning the stove broke, and now I want to go eat lunch, and the stove is like sitting is sitting in front of the table, and I want to just move it out of the way. So in other words, like Letzorech Mekom, I want to move the stove. So according to the Tanakhama, I'm allowed to do that if only one of the legs broke. If two of the legs broke, then it's considered objectively mukta and I can't move it at all. According to Rav, you're never allowed to move the stove even if one leg broke, because there's a concern that you may come to fix the broken leg, which we mock about this.
I still think it's mukta though.
Again, it's not, everyone agrees that the stove is mukta. That's not the issue. Meaning, the question is it just a klisha malachtoli iser, or is it objectively mukta? So according to the Tanakhama, if only one leg broke, in other words, it still could be used for a mutter function. Let's say you want to use the stove as, I don't know, as a paperweight, to hold the door open, let's say, right? So that would technically be mutter. You're not using it to cook with. So according to the Tanakhama, if only one of the legs broke, and it's blocking my Shabbos table, I'm allowed to move the stove. If two of the legs broke, then that's the halachic equivalent of like a rock. It's just objectively mukta, so I can't move that at all. According to Rav, I can never move the stove because, again, of this concern that I may come to fix the leg. Okay. Then the Gemara says, what was the third statement about Torah? To Amar Rav, Asida Torah shetishtakach miYisrael, sheneemar vehiflo Hashem es makosecha. Comes Rav with a startling statement. He says that in the future, Torah is going to be forgotten from Bnei Yisrael. How do we know that? There's a pasuk in the Tochacha in Parshas Kisavo that says, vehiflo Hashem es makosecha. Hashem is going to bring upon you all of these terrible, wondrous plagues and afflictions. So the Gemara says, Hafla zo ini yodei amau. So it's not clear from the pasuk what exactly these wondrous plagues and afflictions are. So the Gemara says, Kishu omer lachin hinani yosif lahafliyas ha'amazeh hafleva fele hevei omer hafla zo Torah. So we have this other pasuk, a pasuk from Sefer Yeshaya that talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, bringing all these terrible punishments upon us because we don't learn Torah. That's a reference to the fact that the pasuk in Parshas Kisavo is referring to people who, in other words, the hafla, the wondrous punishment that's going to happen to us is that in the future we're going to forget our Torah learning. So the Gemara explains, Tana Rabbanan, Kishenichnasu Rabbosenu Lekerem Biavne, Amru, Asida Torah Shetishtakach Miyisrael, Shenemar Hinei Yamim Ba'im Noam Hashem Elokim, Vehishlachti Rav Ba'aretz, Lo ra'av lelechem v'lo tzana lamayim kiyam l'shmoa es divrei Hashem uchsev v'na'u miyam al yamu mitzafon v'ad mizrach yishot tetu l'vakesh es divar Hashem v'lo yimtzau. Divar Hashem zo halacha, divar Hashem zehaketz, divar Hashem zo. It's a very famous pasuk from Sefer Micha, from Sefer Amos, where the pasuk describes that in the future, so everyone's going to start looking, you know, for Torah. The pasuk in Amos says that people are going to be hungry, they're going to be thirsty, not for food or for drink, but they're going to be hungry and thirsty to hear the words of Hashem, but there's just not going to be any Torah accessible because everyone seemingly is going to forget it. And then the pasuk says, you know, people are going to start, you know, searching around the world to find this Torah that was forgotten. So the Gemara explains, "Umay yishotetu levakish es devar Hashem." What does that mean? That people are going to seek out and look for the word of Hashem. So Amru asida isha shetitol kikar shatruma v'sachzor bevatei kinesios ubevatei midrashos leida im temeahi ve'im tohorahi ve'in mevin. So the Gemara says that what's going to happen is in the future a woman is going to go take a loaf of bread. She's going to try to figure out if the bread is tamei or tahor. She's going to go around to all the different batei medrash, all the different rabbanim, and ask them, "Is the bread tamei or tahor?" And no one's going to have any idea. That's a sign that we're going to forget about our Torah learning. So the Gemara says, "What do you mean? Im tohorahi ve'im temeahi ve'hedrik sibe mikol ochel asher ye'achel." How could you possibly forget that halacha? It's an explicit pasuk in Chumash. In Parsha Shmini, the Torah says, if food comes into contact with something tamei, it's tamei. So either the bread touched something tamei or it didn't. Like how is that such a crazy thing for people, you know, for people to remember? So the Gemara says, you're right. El aleda im rishonahi ve'im shniahi ve'in mevin. Rather, what the Gemara meant to say was, not that we're not going to know whether the bread is tamei or not, but we're not going to know to what degree of tuma does the bread have. Is it a rishon l'tuma or a sheni l'tuma? This is already an old story in terms of, you know, different levels. We spoke about this in the very beginning of Masechta Shabbos, right? So in other words, we're not going to know, is the bread a rishon l'tuma? Was it something which came into contact with a person who touched a dead body? Or is the bread only a sheni? Did it come into contact with the person who touched someone else who touched a dead body, right? So we're not going to be sure what exactly the status of the bread is, or maybe the bread touched a sheretz or something like that. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Hanami masnisin hi, kiddis nan, hasheretz shenimtza besanur, hapascha besocho shnia, shahatan or trila. So the Gemara says, but that also should not be such a hard question to answer. It's a Mishnah Maseches Kelim. The Mishnah in Kelim says that whenever you have a sheretz, let's say I have an oven, and I have bread in the oven, and there also happens to be a dead sheretz in the oven. There's a dead mouse, whatever it is, that's in the oven. So the Mishnah in Kelim says explicitly that the bread in the oven is a sheni l'tuma. Why is the bread a sheni l'tuma? Because the oven becomes a rishon l'tuma because of the sheretz. So that means the bread, by definition, is a sheni. So why is this such a big, such a big to-do that everyone's going to forget this halacha? It's an explicit Mishnah. So the Gemara says, no, this was the suffix. In other words, in the future, we're going to be unsure regarding the following question. So according to Rav Ada claims, why don't we look at the oven? Why don't we view the oven as if the entire oven is filled with tuma because of the sheretz, and therefore the bread should actually really be a rishon l'tuma and not a sheni l'tuma. So what's Rava's response? That Amar Lei, Rava says, no, lo amrina lechziyei hai tanura kamanda mali tumu. No, that's not a legitimate thing to say. We're not going to say that the entire oven is filled with tuma. Disanya yochol yuhu kol hakelim itamin ba'avir kli cheres. I might have said that any kli, any utensil that comes into the airspace of an earthenware kli that's tame should also become tame. So for example, I have a sheretz inside of my earthenware oven. Then let's say I take a metal kli, and I start to dangle the metal kli in the airspace of the oven. I might have thought that metal kli should now become tamei. The Gemara says it's not true. What was that?
It's like an ohel.
Well, it's not exactly an ohel. This is more of a halacha in Hilchos Tumah. The Gemara is not quoting this because it has any connection to the previous topics we're talking about. The idea of an ohel l'tumah is really limited only to tumas meis. There is no such thing as an ohel for outside of tumas meis. So this is really like a unique halacha by a kli cheres, right? So the Gemara says, I might have thought if I take my metal kli and I dangle it in the airspace of an earthenware oven where that oven also happened to have a sheretz in it, I might have thought the metal kli should become tameh. The Gemara says it's not true. Talmud lomar kol asher besocho yitma mikol ha'ochel asher yeyachel ochlin metamin ba'avir kli cheres ve'in kelim metamin ba'avir kli cheres. The Gemara Gemara learns from a juxtaposition of two psukim in Parsha Shmini. The Torah first says, "Kol asher b'socho yitma." Anything inside of a kli cheres which has a sheretz in it, let's say, becomes tameh. And then the very next pasuk it says, "Mikol ha'ochel asher yayachel." Anything which is food related, which means that only food can become tameh if dangled in the airspace of a kli cheres oven, but a kli cannot become tameh. So lahalacha, the Gemara says, if I have an earthenware oven that had a sheretz in it, and I'm dangling a kli in the airspace of that oven, that kli will not become tameh. So this is the Gemara stuff. Like, again, we started the Gemara by saying, you know, everyone's going to forget about Torah in the future, and now we're left by saying, no, it doesn't really mean that. It means that we're not going to know the answer to this very, very complex, nuanced question about, is the bread a Rishon or a Sheni Latuma because of the sheretz that's inside of the Kli Cheres? Because this is the Machlokas between Rav Ada Bar Ava and Rava. This is the thing that we're going to forget in the future. It's not like, all of Torah is going to escape us, but there's one little tiny detail regarding, you know, to what degree is the bread Tamei, that apparently no one's going to know, or no one's going to know how to answer that question. That's what the Gemara seems to be saying here. And then the Gemara ends off with a very, very famous line. This line is actually made into a song. It's a very, very famous Gemara. Tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, Chas v'shalom shetishtakach Torah Yisrael shenemar kilosi shachach mipizaro. So Rav Shimon bar Yochai comes and says, Chas v'shalom, of course we're not going to forget the Torah. Now again, remember, in the Gemara's Maskana, all we're talking about here is this very, very subtle question about whether the bread is a Rishon or a Sheni. Like, no one thinks, you know, l'maskan, that we're really going to forget the whole Torah, but still Rav Shimon bar Yochai felt so strongly even about forgetting this one little detail. He says, we're not even going to forget that. He says, so the question, of course, is, so elamani mekayim yeshu tutul Vakish says Dvar Hashem Elohim. So then how does Rav Shimon bar Yochai explain the pasuk in Amos that says that we're going to start looking for, you know, for the Dvar Hashem, and we're not going to find it? So he says, no, Shalom Yimtsu Halacha Brura Mishnah Brura B'Makom Echad. It means we're not going to find clarity in one place, meaning there's going to be a lot of machloksim about a lot of different things. It's not to say that we're going to forget our learning, even these little, you know, nuances, these little subtleties. The pshat just means is that, you know, we're going to have to work a lot harder in order to accomplish, you know, and to figure things out in our learning.